Good afternoon and welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter, filling in for Al Cresta. For those of you who don't know me, I am the host of Unveiling the Covenants here at Ave Maria Radio. An independent review of gender-related medical care for minors and young adults submitted to the UK's National Health Service and found that previous studies on the topic pertaining to medical gender transition for minors are of poor quality, and there's very limited evidence on the longer-term outcomes associated with medicalized transition. We are joined by Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse to talk about this. She is the founder of the Ruth Institute, a global nonprofit organization equipping advocates for the family in their homes and in the public square. She's the author of several books, including The Sexual State, How Elite Ideologies Are Destroying Lives, and How the Church Was Right All Along. Jennifer, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on. I'm glad to be able to talk with you about this.
Oh, the joy is entirely ours. So I really do want to jump right into this. It's a lot to talk about and very little time to address it. But frankly, this is something that most people, and you can even throw the notion of conservative religious doctrine out of this discussion for now, right? Simply appealing to natural law logic and what we know about human biology. Many people have already understood that this was a way not just to eventual antagonism, but actually destruction of the human person. So it's good that science is finally catching up. So, you know, just shed some light on the whole thing for us.
Well, I think as a Catholic, and not just a natural law person, I mean, Catholics are natural law people, but the fact is, to collect every single data point, every single study that we're talking about here was made on the basis that this would be harmless. You're basically experimenting on small children, you know, to say, we have this great idea that maybe it's possible to change the sex of the body. Let's find out. You know, in my opinion, there never should, the burden of proof should always be on somebody who's trying to do something as outrageous as this. And honestly, it's the Catholic understanding of the human person that helps us to see this is an experiment that shouldn't be conducted in the first place. So, you know, it's like everybody's all shocked to find out. Well, not that, I mean, normal people are not shocked at all. Okay, let's be real clear.
Right, right.
The elites are claiming that they are surprised to find out that the data isn't really very good and the data doesn't really support the idea. Well, you should have known going into it that this is an extraordinarily risky proposition. You know, the idea that you're going to do some kind of medical intervention that's going to change a boy into a girl or a girl into a boy. You should have known going into it that this was a fool's errand and that there were going to be all kinds of negative consequences. We should have known that.
Yep.
And so in one sense of the word, I'm very glad that Dr. Cass has examined this data and is in a forthright manner speaking out and saying the data does not prove what people want it to prove. It doesn't show, it proves it's insubstantial data, and it's certainly not enough to continue with these medical interventions. And it's certainly not enough to be bullying parents into thinking that if we don't go along with our child's idea that she's really a boy, that she's going to commit suicide. A doctor starts talking to you like that, you need to run in the other direction.
Right.
Because the truth is, even at the psychological level, Marcus, you know, the healing professions have always taught and understood that if you've got somebody who's suicidal, you don't sit there and yammer at them about suicide and why this or that might make you more suicidal. You don't talk like that in front of a patient who's, you know, thinking about suicide. You try to talk them about something else, you know. I recently interviewed a therapist who was, for a variety of reasons, sick and out of her profession for several years. And when she came back in 2021, she said, I felt like Rip Van Winkle. My whole profession has gone off the deep end. You never talk to a suicidal, distressed patient about suicide like that. You just don't do that. And so the things that used to be common sense, even on the therapeutic side, never mind the medical, you know, drugs and surgery side of things, we've lost all of our common sense in this area. So that'd be the main thing. I would really hope that your listeners, if any of them are struggling with this issue or encountering it in their families, please be encouraged that the science to support the idea that your son can be changed into a girl if you just go along with the program, that this is simply not the case. And you need to stick to your guns, you know, stick to your principles and not let yourself be swept away by the propaganda.
You know, but just as you sharing all this with us, the fact of the matter is, first of all, on the level of logic, you're completely right. Medical intervention that calls for the mutilation of perfectly healthy body parts for the sake of fitting what is ostensibly a fluid psychological issue has never, in any point in history, yielded positive fruit. So logic has always pointed us to the fact that this was always going to be catastrophic. You take a look at early studies that projected some of the results. It said that these surgeries failed to show credible improvements in mental health, suggested a pattern of treatment-associated harms, actually, more than good. And to cite this particular study by Dr. Cass in the Cass Report, long story short, persons with this issue, their findings suggest that although it seemed to alleviate gender dysphoria, it doesn't suffice as treatment. The real treatment called for psychiatric and somatic care. So all of this corresponds to what logic has been dictating all along, what the faith, what we understand about human anthropology has been dictating all along. So from there, you look at Australasian psychiatry, which you wrote about, you quoted them. So just share with us, other countries are beating us to the punch here.
Yes. Let's see. I think the name of this study was "The Gender-Affirming Model of Care is Incompatible with Competent Ethical Medical Practice." Mm-hmm. That's from an Australian Journal of Psychiatry. Sweden, Finland, Norway, France have all taken steps to restrict access to these procedures. I hesitate to call them medical care, but are restricting access to these procedures, particularly for minors. And now, interestingly enough, the Cass report, their main concern was with the treatment of minors, but they wanted to go further and look at this type of care for adults. And there are evidently 7 clinics in the UK that do this kind of work. And of those 7, 6 of them refused to provide the data to the Cass, to Hillary, Dr. Cass. You know, okay, that to me, I'm sorry, that's a big red flag that they don't even want to share their data. You know, come on.
Right, I completely agree with you. And, we're coming up with more and more studies that are showing that even something as seemingly innocuous, you remember when we were told that, puberty blockers are completely reversible. We don't have to worry about them. Well, you know what? You know more. So go ahead and tell us about that.
Well, I mean, so puberty blockers, basically, there's a set of drugs that are available. Their main use is for men with prostate cancer. Or that's one of the uses for it. But also they have been used for children who have what is called precocious puberty. Mm-hmm. And that means like a 6-year-old going through puberty. Okay. So you got a little boy with the testosterone levels of a 14-year-old and the psyche of a 6-year-old. This is a problem. You can imagine the kind of problems that you could have and the difficulties that a child like that might have. And so the puberty blocking drugs were in some cases used for kids in those situations so that they could have time to be a little kid, before they had to go through these bodily changes associated with puberty, including the hormones and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. But the point of that always was to take the kids off the puberty blockers when they got to around 11 or 12 or something like that, so that they could go through puberty in a normal fashion at the normal time where their body and their minds would be a little bit better aligned. And certainly the social system around them would be better able to handle, a 12-year-old with that kind of testosterone level than with a 6-year-old, with that kind of energy and sex drive and so on and so forth. So when people were saying, these are tested, that's the test they were talking about.
Right.
These are reversible. That's what they were talking about. They were not talking about putting a child on puberty blockers and keeping them on puberty blockers through the age where one would normally go through puberty. And so now what they're finding is that part of the process of maturing includes a lot of stuff other than the sexual stuff. So they really don't know the impact on brain development, but they're concerned about it, as well they should be, right? Because the brain's maturing during that period of time. I think we're pretty sure that the puberty blockers in girls impedes the development of strong bones. Mm-hmm. So you're having teenage girls, 20-year-old girls who've been on puberty blockers basically having a kind of osteoporosis that you might see in a woman in her 60s or something, you know.
Right.
They didn't really know that until they tried it. Like, oh, yeah, I guess that's part of puberty, too, you know, mm-hmm. that you get density to your bones and that you have development to the brain. Oh, my gosh, imagine that.
Right.
There's more than one thing happening when you put this hormone through you. When the hormone goes through the body, it's systemic and it has all kinds of ramifications. We shouldn't be doing this experiment on kids. You know, we shouldn't be doing this experiment on anyone.
Adults, that's right.
Yeah, you know, but you know, Marcus, when you think about it, this is not the first time that the sexual revolutionaries have encouraged experimentation. I mean, we didn't really know what hormones or messing with women's hormones is going to do when
we put
everybody on birth control, right?
Yep.
We didn't really know, and we still don't really know the consequence of surrogate motherhood for the child of being taken away from the mother who gestates the baby and then given to the intended parents, the commissioning parents. You know, we hope that doesn't matter to the child. We hope that doesn't, but we don't know that.
Yep.
You know, I mean, how do we know that? How dare we assume that it's going to be okay? You know, we're just plunging ahead with this kind of experimenting on ourselves on a fundamental level, and particularly when kids are involved. These are not life-threatening situations. Infertility is not a life-threatening situation, right?
Yep,
the child certainly cannot give meaningful consent. Nobody can really give meaningful consent to something that's completely untried. And when the situation isn't life-threatening, why would you be encouraging people to take this type of risk unless there was some real promise of real benefit to them?
Right.
I mean, you know, there are serious protocols on people giving consent to experimental therapies, you know, what kind of consent they have to give, how sick they have to be in the first place, what the likely risks are, so on and so forth. It's very involved. The informed consent aspect of this thing is really devastating, and the CAS report is making it very clear that it's going to be much harder to maintain going forward that everybody's giving informed consent here.
And just as you've pointed out, the U.S. Health and Human Services Department has proven to be unreliable as well. I've been talking to Dr. Jennifer Robeck-Morse, founder of the Ruth Institute. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter, filling in for Al Cresta on Cresta in the afternoon.